This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, tower number three. Good morning. Glad you could be with us. Again, a throwback Thursday today as we go back to 1981 and the conclusion of the longest professional baseball game in the history of the sport. It was a minor league affair in Pawtucket, where the Pawtucket Red Sox beat the Rochester Red Wings 3-2. They started on April 18th, and they were going like 30-something innings, and then they went, we got to stop this. And when you come back, we'll wrap it up. And they did. 18 minutes it took to wrap it up finally, and 33 innings later, that game was in the books as the longest game. On this date in 1981, it got wrapped up. So that's our throwback Thursday today. Coming up in this hour, we are going to talk about the Cleveland Browns and, of course, Deshaun Watson. But we're going to talk a little bit more about the Browns organization. We're getting a lot more details about Watson. He's settled, 20 of the 24 civil cases that were pending against him, and there's still yet to be a suspension on the table from the league. But as you guys know, and I say it a lot of times, I like to look at the big picture of things. And here's a Browns team that knew exactly what it was getting. They knew exactly what the problems were with Deshaun Watson. They may have believed him when he said he didn't do any of this stuff, but they knew it was going to be controversial, and they did it anyway. And they gave him a lot of money, and it was all guaranteed, and they did it anyway. And they restructured the contract so that he could not, if he was suspended, it would hurt less financially, and they did it anyway. But now, as they wait on the suspensions, it is starting to get clear with more and more information that Deshaun Watson has an issue. He had a problem. But when he gets suspended, and it's not if, it's when, it's going to be the Cleveland Browns quarterback is suspended, not the Houston Texans quarterback. And he did all of this stuff while he was in Houston. This is now the Browns' problem. It's no longer the Texans' problem. And sometimes fan bases go, look, I don't care. I just want to win. All right, I just want to win and get the guy through suspensions and let's go win some football games. But others are very proud of their team, and they don't want to be embarrassed. Is this an embarrassing look for the Cleveland Browns fans? It's an organization that has gone to the playoffs only a handful of times since coming back into the league. But is this embarrassing enough to make people go, you know, I know he can win us some games. My God, every time he's in the news, my team is right there next to him because he's our responsibility now. We're going to talk to Andy Baskin of that, host of Baskin and Phelps on 92.3 The Fan out in Cleveland. That's coming up next. Also getting to the NBA draft. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, and it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Again, throwback Thursday, 1981. Music from 81 as we, again, honor the Pawtucket Red Sox beating Rochester 3-2 in the longest professional baseball game on this date. This is Sheena Easton. But we got to get to the Deshaun Watson and the Cleveland Browns situation. Andy Baskin joins us, 92.3 The Fan out in Cleveland, host of Baskin and Phelps on the latest of what's going on there. How are you, Andy? Glad you could be with us.
Good. Glad to be with you. Are you sure you don't want to talk about Sheena Easton for a while? I'll be happy to do that.
That's not bad. It isn't. You know, that's a pretty good little catchy tune. And Sheena Easton was pretty good. Pretty good talent back in the 80s. Not bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's my wheelhouse, man. Get me back to the 80s. Life is good.
You got it. This might not have a straight up answer, but I'll ask it anyway. The 20 lawsuits that were settled, does that mean anything for the Browns organization in Deshaun Watson's what's ahead of him?
Yeah, we were trying to get a gauge of it, you know, in the beginning. I just kind of feel, and I keep saying this too, that if you had a pot of water and it was boiling it really, really hot, it's just kind of hot now and maybe a little bit less than hot. I don't know that the league is going to change their mind about what they were going to do, but it just seems like it took a lot of the heat off of the story. But we all know that's going to cook back up again when we finally hear about a suspension here. I would hope very soon. It would not surprise me if the NFL did one of their famous, hey, 4th of July drops, by the way, Deshaun's suspended for a year. That would not shock me at all.
what's the holdup? What seems to be the thing that is preventing the league from going, yeah, all right, we got all we need to know, and this is what it is?
Well, it sounded like the commissioner was all on board with, he said, you know, we're kind of wrapping up our investigation. And then, excuse me, the HBO special came out, and then the New York Times piece came out. And I think they're like, you know what, I don't want to go through. I mean, this is what I think, clearly just, you know, theory, that if you're the NFL, how many times do you want to do the same suspension speech? And if you're going to have to add games to it, you know, why not just wait? Because we're not in any hurry. You know, we're in between minicamp and training camp, so why be in a hurry? You might as well try to get as many facts as you can. And then, by the way, maybe you're putting pressure on Deshaun and his camp to settle some of these cases, which might have just happened. Again, all speculation.
In terms of the organization, does the latest stuff that's come out, what's the temperature in the building, or what's the temperature around the city with more information? Everybody kind of knew what the deal was when he arrived. Does the additional stuff make the situation worse, or is it like, well, we kind of knew all this anyway?
Well, I think one of the things, I think we've heard the allegations. So the more allegations you get, the muddier the water gets, I think, a little bit, as far as just trying to listen to one story or trying to figure out what one of the allegations is and trying to zero in on that and go, okay, you know, what are we thinking about this? It's not really what are we thinking. It's what's the league thinking about the way it, you know, with the personal conduct policy. So the water's kind of muddy right now, and I think the way people think hasn't really changed much as far as, you know, things are going. But I do think that, again, it comes back to the league part of it, not the civil part of it, not the criminal part of it that, you know, he was, you know, no bill twice on, so no criminal charges, right? So it's like we're sitting here going, well, you know, you look at past theory of the NFL, is he getting six games? I don't know. Is he getting 10? I don't know. And then last week it all became very, very much a gut punch that a lot of people think it's going to be a full season.
Given that most everybody kind of knew the deal going in, I don't think there were a lot of people who didn't think there was going to be zero suspension, even though he was denying it back in March. But that being said, fan bases, I get it. If a guy is going to play and he's going to win, we have a tendency to overlook this stuff and move past it. But there's also an attachment to the embarrassment of it. It's the city. It's the team. It's the history. It's everything that you grow up loving and appreciating about your team. That gets attached to this story. Do Browns fans feel embarrassed by this?
I don't know. We've gone through some crazy things here right now. And the fact that he hasn't taken a snap in a game might, you know, lighten the load a little bit. But a lot of people are saying, is this same old Browns? I think that's the you know, can they do anything right? You know, we lost the team in the 90s because Art Modell stole them, you know. It was his team, but he, you know, again, I still say if they just would have worked with the city, they would have been able to stay before they moved to Baltimore. But, you know, that's all. You know, you got that. You got one playoff win since 1999. You've got, you know, an 0-16 season. You got a 1-15 season. You've got an owner that sometimes doesn't seem to want to get out of his own way. How many head coaches have we seen here? How many quarterbacks have we seen here? So, you know, if there was a Lombardi for drama, the Browns would have earned that. But we might be one of the greatest teams in the history of football if there was a Lombardi for drama.
And not to minimize any of this, but the reality of it is, if he's going to play, if he's actually going to play football, is there a side of this that says, well, I'd like him to play for us because we don't have success at that position?
Well, the problem was that Baker Mayfield did have success, and he got hurt last year after week three and never should have been on the field. And you finally had a quarterback that won a playoff game for the first time since 1999. I think that's the hard part for Baker Mayfield fans, is that Baker had success. No way he should have been on the field last year. At some point, we'll find out why. I still don't know why. It like drives me nuts. It keeps me up at night. I'm like, why was Baker Mayfield on the field when they were literally using a glue gun, staples, and some scotch tape to hold his non-throwing shoulder on? Like, just doesn't make any sense. So you had a quarterback who had success, yet they decided to go in another direction. Now, on paper, you could say, okay, Deshaun Watson over Baker Mayfield. I get it. I understand why they want to do it, and it sounds like a great idea. It's just all the baggage that came along with this thing that makes you wonder, are the Browns going to have buyer's remorse here, or do they have buyer's remorse right now? And that's a question they'll have to answer at some point.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was leaning towards. I mean, again, this is it kind of goes back to the other question about embarrassment. Whatever happens to him, whenever he's in the news, it's Cleveland Browns quarterback. It's not Houston Texans quarterback anymore. It's Cleveland right. Browns quarterback. And that becomes a different way of being viewed out, being viewed than if he was just sitting with the Texans not playing.
Yeah, I mean, it was all we didn't even hear Houston's name until, you know, there was talk about being a part of the lawsuit, about
right,
the Texans
right.
being a part of the lawsuit. And that's the only way the Texans got dragged back into this thing. So I also wonder what that had to do. I wonder if that had a part of the settlement. I wonder if what the NFL thought about that. Now all of a sudden you're not in civil court against an individual. Now you're up against a corporation. So I mean, obviously there's more money there, and the league needs to find the fastest road out of this thing they possibly can.
I agree,
and I don't know where it is. And when you watch Roger Goodell sitting on Capitol Hill, or at least on a Zoom call. On Capitol Hill. Like, this has not been a great week for the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Andy, real quick on Baker Mayfield. Where are we today with Baker Mayfield?
There was a little bit of talk about Seattle over the last couple of days. I've never ruled Seattle out of this thing, so I'm not surprised about it. It's all about what the Browns want back. And if the Browns are willing to hang on to Baker for a little while here, some team's going to have an injury during training camp. I don't wish injury on anybody, but let's be honest. Someone's going to need a quarterback. And if Baker's healthy, he's going to help a team. And I was talking to Seattle like last week, and I was like, he can help your team. If he's healthy, you're going to be happy you brought him in.
Andy Baskin again, 92.3 The Fan out in Cleveland. Baskin and Phelps is the show. Thank you. We love when you come on, my friend. Thank you so much as always.
No worries. Love coming on anytime.
Thanks, man. Andy Baskin again out in Cleveland on the Deshaun Watson situation. Interesting stuff. I agree with him completely. The NFL's got to figure out a way to get through this as best they can. And I think he's right in the regards of waiting it out a little bit, right? I mean, I'm wondering the same thing as I think a lot of you are, is like, okay, when are we getting the suspension? Like, when is it going to come down? But we've got some time, and it's there. And I think the NFL is looking at this going, and I think he made a really good point. If you suspend and then whoops, oh my gosh, here comes more information, or somebody else is doing a deep dive investigation into this, and you find out, oh, we suspended him for 8 games, or maybe we should suspend him for 10 games, or maybe we should suspend him for the entire year, and then you have to rethink this, it doesn't become a good look because you are doing an investigation. Are you doing an investigation to get the full story of what's going on? Or are you doing an investigation to just come up with some information to throw some suspension on the wall and hope everybody's satisfied with it? Because if you're doing a full investigation to really process every single thing, so then you can say, this validates a full season, or this validates 10 games, or this validates whatever decision we're making on it, then you better make sure that you've got everything, right? The New York Times went down there and they wrote a whole story on it, and the NFL is sort of going, we'll wait. But they're not in any rush, and I don't think they want to revisit this twice. And I think Andy makes a good point about that. I don't think they want to keep revisiting it. Because Ron and I were talking about this one time before, and that was with the Ray Rice situation. This was a while back. And we were talking about Ray Rice, and if you remember when he, you know, clobbered his fiance at the time in an elevator and knocked her out cold, and the NFL came out and said 2 games, and everybody went nuts. Everybody went bananas. And everybody lost their mind. Everyone was like, wait a minute, did you see the video? Because we all saw the video. Apparently you didn't, because he cocked her right in the face and she fell to the ground and she was unconscious. She was dragging her out of the elevator. You gotta be kidding me. 2 games. 2 games is what you give a guy who may fail a marijuana test or something. Well, actually, they kind of go harder on that.
Deflated balls.
Yeah, maybe getting caught for speeding at 110 miles an hour on the highway, right? Deflated footballs. But not when you punch it with a closed fist in an elevator. But what did the NFL have to do after that? They had to revisit the whole thing, right? They had to go right back to that story, and they had to go right back into it. And they had to come right out and say, whoops, we may have indefinitely.
You know what's weird? That's like Ray Rice's contribution to the NFL.
Yeah, it was.
Because I don't really remember suspensions before that.
Right.
You know, every once in a while you got a drug suspension here or there. But
right, if you failed a drug test or whatever, yeah. But yeah, and I think the NFL doesn't want to do that here. Like, I mean, I think the NFL doesn't want to come out and say, all right, we looked it over, and we think he's suspended 8 games. And then like a week later, they go, oh, by the way, did you know about this? And they go, oh, we did not know about this. And it's some really horrible thing.
Yeah, after they've already came out and claimed that they did their due diligence.
Yeah, they did their due diligence and everything. When they go, well, we did a full investigation. And then somebody like the New York Times or anybody else that's investigating this thing, it's like, yeah, did you know about this situation? And it's some really, really unbelievably god-awful thing. And the league goes, oh, jeez, all right, well, we're sorry we gave him 6 games, but now we got to give him 12. And now we got to give him a whole year. Like I think they want to do it once and be done and wrap it up and move on. And then he serves it and then he plays and then that's it. But I don't think they want to come back and go, whoops, we got to add more because we're not doing our job.
But I think it has to be a year.
I think so, too.
I mean, just because they may have shot themselves in the foot ahead of time with the Calvin Ridley situation.
Yeah,
I agree. You know, suspending him for a year for legally betting on football. And it's like, all right, well, this is illegal what he's done.
The thing with Calvin Ridley, and when I remember explaining this when I went down, and I sort of get it when the league says, hey, man, we don't want our players like getting involved with that because it's just this. We don't want anybody to think there's some sort of taintedness that goes when our employees are getting. I get it. But you're not selling the public that was a justifiable 1 year suspension, no matter how you paint it, right? A guy doing a parlay card on a legal book site is not the same as throwing games for the mob, right? Which is why a lot of these gambling laws were, these gambling rules were put in sports to begin with, right? They were afraid of the underbelly of American organized crime creeping into their sport. Now you got a player that has been suspended a year for doing a parlay card. You can't sell that if you are selling us 8 games for Deshaun Watson. That's not going to work. I don't care who you are. That's just not going to work. The league can't sell it. So I think you're right. It has to be a year, or go back to Calvin Ridley and go, our bad. Did we say a year? I'm sorry. 4 weeks.
Right.
Like, we're our fault. Yeah, we got you mixed up with somebody else. Like, or something along those lines, because it's just without, for lack of a better term, it's just not sellable.
Yeah. They can't come out and go, oh, you mean this Deshaun Watson? Oh,
right. Oh God, yeah.
I thought you were talking about, the Deshaun Watson.
Right, exactly.
I don't know. Yeah. Heard you wrong.
All right. So thanks to Andy Baskin. Love having him on. He's really good. And I love, you get the feeling with him, he's like a kind of the heart, kind of part of the heart and soul of that sports city. You know what I mean? Like, knows that like a back of his hand. I always like it when Andy comes on. Scott Spinelli is going to join us in 14 minutes. We're going to talk NBA draft with him. He's the host of The Breakdown on the Believe Podcast Network. We'll talk about him and what's going to go on tonight as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Throwback Thursday, Hall & Oates. I love this music, by the way. This is good. I'm having a fun time this morning. 1981 on Throwback Thursday. So, 1981 is a year after Empire Strikes Back came out. So, there you go.
Yep.
Keeping it within the Star Wars conversation we had.
2 years before Return of the Jedi came out.
People don't realize this, but you can get a sequel going pretty quickly in this country. And back then, it took 3 years for Star Wars, Empire, and then Return of the Jedi. 3 years. So if you were young like I was, and your parents took you to see Empire Strikes Back, and you watched Han Solo get put in carbonite, and Darth Vader tell Luke he's his dad, and Luke getting his hand chopped off, and the Empire basically winning, and you were like, oh my God, how's this story going to end? You had to wait 3 years before Lucas would slap together another film and go, here you go, here's your answers.
Yeah, where do we go from here?
Where do we go from here? Like, now, forget it. They'd be like, let's turn this out. Let's get this ready to go. Let's film it. Let's film it together, and then let's get the other one in the can, and then we'll release it next summer.
Do you think that's part of the reason why they're doing remakes of movies instead of... they're remaking these older movies so that way they can turn out a sequel much faster.
Yeah, maybe that's so. Maybe that's true. Yeah.
Maybe the early 80s, late 70s version doesn't hold water anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I just got done watching that Obi-Wan Kenobi thing on Disney Plus, and I liked it. I know people didn't like it. I liked it. I'm fine with it.
There's always going to be Star Wars nerds, and I know I can use the term Star Wars nerd because I am one.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's always going to be those out there who are just going to hate everything new of Star Wars.
I saw a great tweet this morning. It was really funny. It was a person that wrote, you know, they don't explain how in 10 years, Obi-Wan Kenobi aged like this. And then in the 9 years after that, he aged like this. And they show a picture of Alex Guinness. And somebody wrote, yeah, because it's different actors. And I was like, yeah, good point. What do you want? It's not the same person. But can we, like, Alex Guinness played Obi-Wan Kenobi in 3 movies as a ghost in 2 of them. But nevertheless, in 3 movies. Can we say Ewan McGregor is now Obi-Wan Kenobi? Can we say that, or is that a little sacrilegious?
No, I think we have to move on.
What do you mean move on? Like Ewan McGregor now has it?
Yeah.
It's his?
That's his.
Yeah. Yeah, because Ewan McGregor's good. He's good at this. I like him as Obi-Wan Kenobi. The other day he was on an Expedia ad, and I was like, oh, look, Obi-Wan Kenobi is selling me travel. How awesome. And then he did that video where he was supporting, what was the actress's name? Moses Ingram? But we did this in The Good, the Bad, and the Dumb.
Yeah.
Like people were criticizing Moses Ingram for her portrayal in this. And he was like, he did a video in his car. And he's like, you're no Star Wars fan if you criticize. We love Moses. You're a Star Wars fan and you're a racist. Or you're no Star Wars fan of mine. I mean, he's now kind of the spokesperson for Star Wars. So, but anyway, 81, I was still in massive Star Wars mode when I was a kid. Basically, when I think back to my childhood, it's really the only movie series I remember just completely and utterly infatuated with all the time for a 6-year period.
Yeah. Or when you
or
finally
maybe
got
five
it.
Because 77, I was a little young. And
well,
I'm
glad you brought this in because it's tangent. I was just doing the math,
mm-hmm.
right? So Alex Guinness was 63 years old when he did Star Wars.
Well, he did the first one,
A New Hope.
Okay,
right? Because that's what people are complaining about. I guess, right?
They're saying, oh, Obi-Wan's too old. Like, yeah. he looks too old in A New Hope. If you want to do Ewan McGregor,
right? But we've talked about this before in the past that people aged differently back then,
right?
Ewan McGregor is 51.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. All right.
So, I mean, we're only talking like a 12-year difference between the two. Let's face it, 63-year-olds today don't look like 63-year-olds back then.
No doubt. Yeah, so, you know, I had all the toys. I had the Star Wars movie on Laserdisc back then, which was the pre-VCR. I watched it 100 times. I couldn't wait for these movies to come out. Like, I could not wait for these movies to come out.
I had all the different versions of VHS.
Yeah,
I know. Every time they came out with a new one. Gotta get the new one.
Of course. But I think Raiders of the Lost Ark might have been the only other one that I was kind of in that I really liked. But I can't think of a movie series in my, I mean, I'm talking like adolescent. I mean, I'm talking like in elementary school.
Yeah.
That had me consumed almost all the time.
I remember getting into an argument when I think I was either in kindergarten or first grade, and I remember this vividly because we were, you know, playing Star Wars on a playground.
Yeah.
And I got into an argument with a kid because I knew he was wrong about something. About, you know, like the love interest between Han Solo and Princess Leia. And he's like, no, it's Luke and Leia. And I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not.
I can remember going to the arcade and playing a Star Wars video game where the graphics were just green lines. Like, they weren't even like pictures of things. It was just like you took the fighter into the Death Star, but it was just line graphics rather than like actual pictures.
That game was awesome.
That was amazing. Are you kidding me? And you heard Ben Kenobi behind you? Use the Force, Luke. And that's when you knew to fire the guns into the shaft. Yeah, man, it was great. Completely dominant. We'll talk NBA draft. That's tonight. As we get going on for that one coming up next, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
your mean, mean pride.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I know this song didn't come out yesterday, but 1981, I probably would have guessed mid-80s. 81, that's over 40 years old, Tom Sawyer. That's wild. Throwback Thursday here on SportsMap Radio. Again, Pawtucket over Rochester, 33 innings on this date, 1981. The conclusion of the longest professional baseball game in the history of the sport. We have no idea why we even have to put professional. Maybe there was an amateur game, like a high school game that went 40 innings. We have no idea. But this went 30 innings back in 1981. That's our Throwback Thursday. Started on April 18th, ended on this date in 1981. That's our Throwback Thursday. And that's Rush and Tom Sawyer as we continue. Scott Spinelli joins us, the Believe Podcast Network, and talking NBA draft, which, by the way, is tonight. The Orlando Magic have the number one overall pick. He is the host of The Breakdown, former BC interim head coach, and recruited NBA players like Chris Middleton and Jerome Robinson. So he joins us here on SportsMap Radio. How are you, Scott?
Excellent. Thanks for having me today. Always great to be here with you guys.
Appreciate it. Let's get started. How deep is this draft, in your opinion? In terms of the players going all the way down into the 20s, how deep is it in terms of talent?
Well, I think, first and foremost, this is probably, the deepest draft as it relates to getting value besides maybe the top five or six picks. I think there's going to be guys in the second round and maybe even guys in the free agent market who don't get drafted that could bring a lot of value here in terms of where they could be someday in the NBA. And the one thing that really sticks out to me about this year's draft is versatility. The word versatility, you have a lot of players with versatility, with skill, and I think the number one the premium for most teams is to address the versatility and skill that's needed now in the NBA with players who can really shoot the three ball.
The top three teams are going to be Orlando, Oklahoma City, and Houston. There is Banchero, Smith, and Holmgren are three players that people have got going in different places. Is Jaden Ivey in that mix to go in the top three?
You know, I think it all depends on the fit of what the teams are looking for. To me, I think Jaden Ivey maybe is that fourth pick and below. I just think those top three guys, again, when you talk about all three of them being very skilled, all of them have some size to them with versatility, I think those three top picks can play multiple positions all on the floor and do a lot of things right now that are happening in the NBA, especially if you want to play a kid like Chet Holmgren at the five and do some switching with him. I mean, he's a matchup nightmare. Obviously, Banchero is probably the most physically ready at 260 pounds at 6'10". He can do all of the above. And then Jabari Smith is just an enormous talent with great length and size and skill.
I like Jabari Smith. I watched a lot of SEC basketball. I thought he was the most dynamic player in the conference because he's 6'10 and can shoot the three. But that being said, is Holmgren a more attractive player to go at number one for what Orlando's looking for?
For me personally, I think Holmgren is a modern-day, generational, skilled, talented player that really equates to what I believe, and I think this probably is consistent with every coach and front office guy, and that is he equates to winning. There's really nothing Chet Holmgren does do that, you know, relates to or equates to that of someone that, you know, he's a winner in terms of how he impacts the game on both ends of the floor. And I think it's hard to pass up on that. I mean, look, you have a player that not only can shoot the three, you know, he can mid-range, he scores it, he can get in the post and take smaller guys down there and just score right over them. But he also is a tremendous rebounder. He's a shot blocker in terms of being with great size, but at the same time, he's got unbelievable timing. He keeps those block shots in play. And the other side of it, too, and this is lost, and especially him and Banchero's case, to me, those two guys are two of the best passers in the draft and at their size. So I just, again, for me, I really, really think Holmgren is a can't-miss major impact guy for years to come in the NBA because of the modern-day game in terms of how it's played.
As a coach, what do you think of his size? How much bulk is he going to need for the NBA game?
Well, look, I think obviously that's the one thing that I think people right now are probably looking at in his body. Is he going to be ready? How much weight can he put on? But, you know, look, we saw another young man, Kevin Durant, you know, who everybody talked about, you know, being maybe a guy that was always going to be wiry and maybe lanky and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, he's had a Hall of Fame career, and, you know, and Kevin Durant has. And I think, not that I'm comparing these two in terms of how they play, but again, he'll get strength, he'll get stronger. You know, he might not be the body type in terms of his, you know, thickness, but he's always going to be a guy that will, you know, be a guy that I think can get stronger throughout his time. But I just think his skill set and how he impacts the game on both ends of the floor, I mean, he, again, defines winning to me in so many different ways. He's going to impact the NBA game in terms of helping your team win, meaning Holmgren.
Let's talk about Shaden Sharp because, no, we didn't get to see him at Kentucky. He didn't play, and he hasn't played five-on-five basketball in over a year. But those who have gone to see him at the practices of John Calipari love him. What do you make of him and where he might fit in the top 10?
Well, look, I think anytime you look at a kid like him, again, you're talking about a kid who's 6'6", you know, who's very, very versatile. You know, he's a kid that is extremely athletic. And again, when you're looking at players like him who are young like him, you know, that have a tremendous ceiling to him, I think that's a lot of this, right? I mean, you're drafting not only to impact your team now, but some of these teams are looking for guys like him that they can develop over time. They're going to get stronger. I mean, but you know, the way he plays, I mean, God, he's so athletic. You know, he's kind of one of those guys who just has so much what we call upside. That, you know, I don't think you can pass on him. And then again, at 6'6", he's got versatility, he's got skill. You know, sky's the limit for this young man. And look, as we both know, in the NBA, you're going to get better year in and year out in terms of being more consistent shooting the ball just because of the shoot-arounds and the individual development and all the skill sessions they have. But, God, he's just got tremendous talent. At his age, and I think, again, I think most people are looking at where he's going to be someday, not necessarily just today.
Scott Spinelli joins us, host of The Breakdown on the Believe Podcast Network, again, former BC interim head coach, talking NBA draft, which will be tonight. All right, with a lot of the talent that's out there, and it goes pretty deep, do we expect a lot of movers and shakers in round one of teams that want to move up, or is there enough talent for these teams to just sort of say, I'll stay where I'm at and get some talent where I'm at?
Look, I think there's a lot of talent in this draft. Again, I think it all comes down to a fit. When you're putting a team together at any level, whether that's AU, high school, you know, college, small college, high, you know, Division I, and in the NBA, it's a puzzle. And you've got to have pieces that fit. Again, we've talked about this word versatility. There's so many players to me in this draft that, you know, you could take a chance on and get value with not only in the top, you know, the first round, but the second round, even some of the free agents. I mean, there's guys that really we haven't talked about much. I mean, I really, again, if you have a need for a guy like, you know, Jeremy Sochan, you know, from Baylor, I mean, here's a guy that just is relentless out there. He's a machine rebounding the ball. He's athletic. He's improved his skill set. I mean, you can't find guys with, again, his versatility defensively. You could play him at multiple positions and do tons of switching with him. You know he's going to be that, you know, Rodman-type rebounder in the NBA because of the effort he puts forth. But, again, you have to have a need for a guy like that. Again, I would be looking at him just based on if you looked at a lot of the teams that need versatility with a defensive guy that can really rebound the ball, I think he fits that mold very well. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of value in this draft.
I want to get a big picture question for you, if you don't mind, because you're kind of wired into the whole business of basketball. How do you grade or how do you look at the way young talent is being developed right now from all the way from, again, the early days through these leagues to college or even not college, saying I'll go to the G League and not go to college? Because, again, if you have this level of depth, it's because there's just a lot of young talent. Is that young talent, is this an anomaly or is this a process that is producing a lot of these kind of young 19 to 20 year old players that are really impactful?
Well, look, I don't think the age has anything to do with it, but what I do think that you're basically, and I think it's a great point you're making, and that is there's so much now an emphasis on skill development. And, you know, there's excellent trainers out there that are working with these kids when they're very young, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old, and then all the way up through their, you know, junior high years into high school. And so, again, you know, when you have that kind of training and trainers and coaches are working to develop your skill, because the basketball game now at one point, you know, or at least it used to be, you know, a lot of it was predicated on, you know, how big you were, how tall you were, how athletic you were. But with that three-point line now, it's become like the great equalizer. And I think a lot of these kids are training with some very good trainers at young ages. And then when they get to college, obviously, player development is very, very important. And then, again, when they get to the NBA, it's even that much more because there are no time constraints on your player development side like there is in the NCAA. So I just think it's really been about skill development at a young age with a lot of these kids, and that's what we're seeing now.
The Breakdown is the podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. Scott Spinelli is the host of that. He's also with us on Sports Map Radio. NBA draft tonight. Thank you so much, Scott. Good insight. I really appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, okay?
You got it. Again, Scott Spinelli joining us to go over the draft. You know, and that's that to me, again, I mean, listen, I think Jabari Smith is going to go number one. That's just my opinion. I told you at the beginning of this show, if Chet Holmgren gets drafted by the Magic, I'm not going to be shocked. If Paolo Banchero gets drafted by the Magic, I'm not going to be shocked. My choice, if you said pick one of the three, my choice is Jabari Smith. Some others might be Chet Holmgren. But nevertheless, I think it's these three. Me, personally, I really narrow it down to two. I think it's going to be Jabari Smith or Chet Holmgren. I may raise my eyebrows a little bit at Paolo Banchero. I not saying that he doesn't deserve to be number one. I know a couple of mock drafts have him number one. To me, I think it's between two guys. I think the Magic have sort of shifted a little bit. I think they've sort of shown their cards a little bit. They really like Jabari Smith. They like Chet Holmgren. I think they like Smith more. You got to go with what the organization is sort of playing and putting out there. And I also think you got to get signals from other teams. And I think the signal that the Rockets sent by getting rid of Christian Wood is that we can sacrifice and get rid of this power forward because we're going to bring in this power forward. And that power forward is going to be Banchero. And I think that Jabari Smith is a guy that Orlando really, really likes. And that's where I see this going. But the question I asked him at the very beginning about Jaden Ivey is that it's funny because it looks like Sacramento is where the draft is going to actually start. You can argue the top three, right? Shuffle those cards, deal them out however you want. It won't blow me away. Ivy at four, or does somebody else other than Sacramento get Ivy at four? Or does anybody else like Ben Mathurin go at four because a certain team got into four with the trade with Sacramento? Sacramento will wheel and deal that if the price is right. They will. I don't know if they will in the end because I don't know if the price will be right, but there's a lot of buzz that Sacramento will be willing to trade the four. I don't think you're going to get any movement in the top three. I think Orlando, Oklahoma City, and Houston like exactly where they are and exactly what will be available to them tonight. But I think Sacramento could wheel and deal that. It could be the Knicks that will put a package together. It could be Portland. Portland's making a move. They got Jeremy Grant in a deal yesterday. It could be, you know, somebody else. Washington is at 10. Maybe Washington moves up, gets Sacramento down at 10. They'll still find value, but they'll get more currency. You know, it's going to be interesting. I think the fourth pick is where the action is really going to begin. All right, Stoney D, Ron Culver. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Hello, I'm Giuseppe. I got something special for you. Ready? Uno, due, tre, quattro. When I was a boy, just about the 8th grade, Mama used to say, don't stay out the late.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, you kind of stumped me on this one. This sounds familiar, but I can't sing along to this.
Yeah, no, I think you got to wait for the hook.
The hook?
All yeah, right. Which is coming
up. Thursday, 1981.
It's coming up right here.
All right. I feel like a fool. And the mama used to say all the time, what's the matter you? Yes, okay. What do you think you do? It was on the charts in 1981. It's a not so bad. Very good, very it's good. Nice that's good throwback.
Shut up in your face.
Shut up in your face. beautiful.
Like I said, like I told you during the break, it's like I don't know if how many people remember the song. I do. And that's why I put it in there, and it's a song I literally have not heard in 40 years.
I know. I haven't heard it in forever. All right. You know what? I'm going to say something here as we get ready to close out this hour that is probably the most obvious statement in the world, but I'm going to tell you why it's valuable to me today. All right, you ready? I can't wait for college football season to start. Now, you might be going, of course, it's where I like in a dead period of time. Like, we got the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, and that's kind of it. Draft tonight, off season. But the next competitive thing, the real competitive thing, is going to be college football. But you know why I am saying that today? Because Pete Futek at College Football News put out his South Carolina preview, and I've been kind of reading it during the break.
Uh-oh.
And now I am absolutely jazzed.
You're all in.
He's the master salesman on your team, man. Like, he can make you think like, oh, you got something going on. He's got Spencer Rattler pretty much winning the Heisman Trophy and the Gamecocks making some upsets this season.
I mean, why not?
So excited.
Why not?
I got done reading this. It's about four or five web pages of information that he put out there. And I literally can't. Like, I got to fast forward the calendar to get this Spencer Rattler thing going on for South Carolina this season. I can't wait. Well, they're coming to Vanderbilt in early November. I am absolutely going to be there.
Don't hesitate to get a jersey.
I know. I might have to.
It might be too late for you by the time that comes around.
Exactly. You might be right. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.